Let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go.
Let me be clear about one thing right off the top of the program today. I don't like being that right. Okay. I took a little heat from a couple of friends of mine for doing that last week, saying that I thought that the Jets would win this game. I have largely followed my gut instinct, which is why when it comes to doing things like this, and frankly, it's why I don't gamble and don't wager on games, because my emotions always get the better of me, and I don't follow my gut instinct. But when I do, I think we kind of see what happens. So, at any rate, we welcome you inside the playbook for a Tuesday. It's our first Tuesday program of the year, simply because we got started late with Monday Night Football and the like. Let's go this route today. Past couple of years on Tuesdays, they have been known, and I had a couple of emailers last week suggest that, where are nitpick Tuesdays. This is the day that we kind of tear apart the game after having a chance to reflect upon it, look back on it a little bit. And I think we'll probably do that to a large extent because, quite frankly, Fred is correct when he says there are a lot of emails in the queue here. And one of the things that we like to do here on Patriots.com radio, which is why we hope we think we have a pretty good following, is that we do take the time to read these. And we do take the time to share them with you, not only so you can hear your email, but hopefully have your question that you've taken the time to write to us, hopefully have your question answered. Because for many of you, undoubtedly, this is the one way that you get your Patriots news and information, especially if you are outside of the immediate, area. So, in that regard, we're going to spend today catching up with a lot of the emails. I'll give you some of my thoughts. Brian Lowe from Patriots Today will join us in the second hour of the program. Today's normally his off day, but he kind of figured today would be busy, so he has acquiesced. He's going to join us on the phone in the second hour of the program, and we're going to kind of nitpick. We're going to pick nits in this game, although there's really not much to pick. But I promise you one thing. I am going to spend at least a couple of moments underlining the positives as I see them going forward here, because after all, there are 2 weeks down and still 14 weeks to play. And I think that should be at the top of the list today. Fact remains, we've got a lot of football still to play, and we've got a long, long way to go. And I think every Patriot fan should realize that. I've already read some of the emails here from a couple, just kind of sorting through them a little bit. And for instance, my buddy Stripper says, face it, guys, and I'm going to paraphrase here, we're just not any good this year. And while I think the immediate reaction to that would be, you're overreacting. I don't think right now, no, that this team is anywhere near where we thought it would be, and I think that's why we're all disappointed. That doesn't mean this team can't be where we think it could be by the end of the year. But you have to have a certain number of things go right for you. You have to have people stay relatively healthy, and you've already lost a major linebacking piece of the puzzle. I mean, frankly, if we had a do-over on the Richard Seymour thing, I think we'd have to be rethinking that right now, don't you? If you'd known that you were going to be without a guy like Mayo in the middle, don't you think that we'd be rethinking that just at least a little bit? I said it before, I'll say it again, didn't like the deal when it happened, don't like the deal now, won't like the deal at any point in time this year, may not like this deal until 2011, until we figure out who the heck you get. And then what if somehow Oakland turns it around next year in an uncapped season, and that quote-unquote alleged top 10 pick becomes 23rd, 24th, 25th. Is it still worth what you think it's going to be? Is it still worth it? Would you still make that deal? Hindsight being 20/20, I realize that it's all water under the bridge. There is nothing, absolutely nothing we can do about it. The deal's been done. It's over, and we move on here. But you want me to nitpick. I am going to nitpick today, and it starts with personnel moves, of which personnel people are responsible for. Now, you read into that whatever you like. But as long as we're going to pat people on the back for doing a great job and doing the job that they're paid to do, and for all of the success they have had over the, you know, the 10-year reign, you know, in New England thus far, they must also accept the criticism. That's fair. That's what we do. Especially, that's what we do in the media. And the one thing that I have always loved about covering Boston sports for the last 21 years, as I have covered them, is that people are passionate. But not just the fans here that are passionate. It's the media that's passionate. And it's the media that, however, well, maybe you don't like their manner in achieving it, but what they do is they get to the bottom of the story. And they try to unearth the truth. And maybe that's just the Patriot, the New England spirit about us all, you know, up here, which is one of the reasons why I sought out to come here, you know, having grown up and learned my trade in the state of Texas for a number of years. I wanted to come to a place where it mattered, and it matters here. There is true passion, not just in the fandom, but in the folks that do the job that I do. You have to ask questions. Too many places, too many teams, questions don't get asked. They may not ever be answered, and I think we all know that, you know, the questions that are asked here of this particular team oftentimes are not answered to our satisfaction, but we know that's what we're going to get. And so we ask the questions anyway, knowing full well that the question will probably not be answered to our satisfaction. The one thing that we can be assured of in a constant is it is what it is. That's the one thing that I think we've all taken away from this over the last 10 years. So it comes down to a point where, you know, when Coach Belichick said in his post-game press conference after the game Sunday, we were outplayed, outcoached, out everything. Yes, it's true. They were. And I think that disappoints me as a fan, looking at it from a fan's perspective more than anything else. Why would you be outcoached, outgame-planned, outperformed, outmotivated? Why? Why would you allow this to happen? Do the Jets really not matter? I mean, I realize that, you know, you've pretty much had your way with them like you've had your way with Buffalo, but it's still a divisional game. It's still a team and that talked smack all last week. You know, Vince Wilfork didn't say a lot after the game either, but he was pretty succinct. And, hey, they backed it up. You got to give them their due. You have to give them the respect. They earned it. And as much as it may pain Patriots fans to admit that, it is the truth. The Jets absolutely backed it up. Now, did they embarrass anybody? No. But they sure won. And when all is said and done, all that matters is the win or the loss. And if you're a team that allegedly is a Super Bowl contender, you are an alleged Super Bowl contender for a couple of pretty good reasons, not the least of which is having talent on your roster and having more of it than the other guys that you're competing against. So if you have more talent than the other guy and the other guy beats you, what's wrong with you? Why are you not playing up to your potential? One of two things will happen. Either A, you're hurt and you don't have the available talent, or B, your talent is woefully underperforming. Now, unless Gerard Mayo is that talented, and he's on the defensive side of the football, let's remind you, then there are some real underperformers on the offensive side of the football. Now, that may be the great understatement of today. I realize that. I think we all realize that there are some guys that are not doing what we thought they would do. But let me examine this just a little further. Number one, in case anybody cares to dial it back, listen, yes, I did pick the Jets to win, but let's dial it back a little further. Say a year ago. And when Tom Brady went down, he went down with an ACL injury. The prognosis, you know, was allegedly good, that it was going to take him a while, but he would bounce back and everything would be back to normal. And that's when we began our current thought process. What you don't realize is that especially when you're a quarterback, especially when you're somebody who relies on their somewhat nimble footness, someone who is not shy to step up in the pocket, to run when you have to, not afraid to get hit, stand up, take whatever comes to you. You're going to be a little gun shy, and it's only human nature when you're trying to protect a knee like Tom Brady's protecting. Not the least of which, you know, physically speaking, it does take a while to get back into the fold. And I said it a year ago, and I'll say it again right now. I did not expect Tom Brady to be the Tom Brady that we were all used to after he hurt himself. I said it's going to take a year or two. Carson Palmer is a great case in point. Nobody wanted to listen. Fans didn't want to listen. All they cared about was, oh, Tom's going to be okay. Okay, we'll just chalk this year up and let's see what happens with Matt Cassel. And Matt Cassel led you to a season that nobody really thought was achievable a year ago. In the offseason, Matt Cassel was like, okay, Matt, thanks. Don't let the door hit you on the way out, by most fans. Why? Because Tom Brady was coming back. Everybody thought, well, Tom Brady's going to be able to pick right up where he left off. I have to admit, I almost bought into the hype. But I still thought that rust would end up being a factor. I was concerned a little bit over, you know, I actually was happy that he played as much as he did in the preseason. Certainly, I think he could have used more, but I'm happy that he played as much as he did. He obviously could have used more. But you don't play people in meaningless games because you don't want to take a chance on something horrible happening. And it's an entirely different issue, which is why, you know, the preseason as it currently consists has still got to go, in my opinion. But I knew it was going to take a while. And now we are 2 weeks into the regular season, and Tom has been less than Tom. Certainly less than what we've come to expect based on what we last saw of him in 2007. And believe it or not, I think we all have bought into the hype of Tom Brady, and I think that is why we're experiencing the letdown that we are. It takes time, kids. Has anybody within my earshot right now, anybody within the sound of my voice, has anybody ever experienced an ACL injury like he has? I have. Mine was a complete and total blowout of the knee. My knee, according to my doctor, exploded. This was back in 1976. My knee exploded. Lost all of my major ligaments, ripped everything to shreds. And this is well before we knew what an ACL or an MCL or an LCL was. We didn't even know what cartilage was. I mean, it was called that, but I mean, it was just you hurt your knee. And so I had it completely basically rebuilt. I had a cadaver's ligaments put into my knee because mine were shredded. I tore it playing basketball. Caught my knee in a tartan floor surface playing basketball. My heel dug into one of those soft spots on a floor that has now long since been outlawed, you know, by the NBA and college basketball everywhere. You're not supposed to play on those floors because they can cause injuries. I caught a soft spot, turned to make a pivot pass, and rip, there it goes, everything. This was 33 years ago, and my knee is still not normal, kids. Now, granted, I did not rehab and never have probably rehabbed to the extent that a professional athlete rehabs. Okay, I'm not going to put myself on that plane. I just don't belong there. But I will tell you that, you know, I did what I thought for the time was normal rehab. I was a high school basketball player. I did play a little bit in college. And so I had to be able to rehab it to the point where I could actually cut and run again. And 33 years later, it's still not normal. And yet we expect Tom Brady to just jump right back into it like nothing ever happened against Kansas City in week one last season? You're nuts. You, and yes, you. You're all nuts. Now, it doesn't mean he can't be. But there has to be a learning curve. There has to be some downtime. And you must allow for him to have that learning curve ability again. There are a lot of things he has to get used to. Let's compound this fact with the fact that he was squished like a bug by Auburn Ainsworth in the preseason. Anybody get a good look at that hit? You know what it's like to have 350 pounds fall squarely on your shoulder? With you in the middle of 350 pounds of weight and the hard ground? And he's coming at you at, oh, I don't know, a couple miles an hour, whatever he can manage. And he just basically sits on it. Anybody when you were little, were you ever sat on by a bully? Bully ever sit on you? Sit right on your chest where you couldn't breathe? You know, I finally learned how to get up from a bully, but it did take me a while. Bullies sit on you because they can. It's not because they necessarily dislike you. It's because they can do it. Albert Hainsworth rushes passers because he can. He doesn't mean to hurt Tom, per se. And he said so much after the hit. He was just doing his job. Brady didn't even blame Albert Hainsworth. But he got squished like a bug, which means his right shoulder is hurt. So let's take the knee and let's take the shoulder. Oh, and yeah, let's add to the fact that he's thrown, what, 100 passes over the first two games of the week, first two games of the year, with no semblance of a running game, and you're surprised that this team lost a game? Come on. Who are you kidding? Can you put aside your emotion for a minute? And that's all I did last week in picking the Jets. That's all I did is I put aside for once, and I have to admit I'm as guilty of it just about as much as you are. But I tried my hardest last week to set it aside, and it just kept coming back to me. And when something keeps coming back to me, I have to pay attention. That kept coming back to me.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Brian's learned to find the drop switch.
Only took me 21 minutes.
Attaboy. Way to go. Hey, you're learning. You're learning. Everybody's got to learn, right? So, you know, I just put my emotion aside. And I said, I just didn't like the factor, all the factors going in, least of which the Jets had all the emotion on their side. So what if they were building it up as their Super Bowl in September? Who cares? They know it's a long season. They said as much after the game was over. All they were trying to do was psych themselves up for this week. And they clearly did it to the best of their ability. In hindsight, the ploy, marketing as it may have been, by Rex Ryan to call the fans last week and ask them to come out in force, brilliant. Why? Because we're spending time talking about it, you know, laughing about it, saying it was the stupidest thing we'd ever seen or heard or what have you, and yet the Jets fans were slowly brewing to a nice, bubbling, frothy, you know, cauldron of emotion. And it worked. So they totally and completely had the Patriots' number going in last week. I'm a little surprised that it was as close as it was. The Patriots had a chance to obviously go down the field and tie it, you know, with just a little under 2 minutes to go. But unfortunately, because of the fact that, A, Wes Welker did not play, and we certainly hope that his injury is not, you know, terribly serious. But, you know, with knees, who knows? And with this team, we may never know what truly is wrong with him. And that is part of the frustration of being a member of the media. They just don't give you anything here. And it's very hard to obtain it. And even if you do get it, what do you do with it? Because you can't get it verified. But Welker was out. That's taking nothing away from Julian Edelman's performance. He's not Wes Welker. Randy Moss and Darrell Revis, I mean, come on. Moss caught four, you know, basically meaningless balls the entire game. Part of that is Brady's fault. Part of that is Moss's fault. And a large heap of dose of the blame has to go to the offensive game plan. Stunk. I think you also have to give the Jets a lot of credit for their defense. Jets did what they had to do. They forced the Patriots into kicking field goals rather than touchdowns. And so an age-old problem, something that has bitten this team over the last couple of years, is rearing its ugly head again, and that is performance in the red zone. It's mediocre at best, if almost really inconsequential. Threes instead of sevens will not win you games, much less Super Bowl championships. So you see, I'm trying to be a little bit analytical here to start the day, start our program in our Nitpick Tuesday. And by the way, true to form, I've waited some 25 minutes into the program to give you an idea of what, you know, Nitpick Tuesday is all about if you're just tuning into the program for the first time. But I wanted to get off what was on my chest now. On Nitpick Tuesday, I want you to take one facet of the game, one aspect of the game and just tear it apart. I want you to nitpick. Whether it's a good thing that you think will go bad or a bad thing you think will go good, or if it's a bad thing you think will stay bad. We're nitpicking here. We're picking the nits out of the crumbs that are left over from the 16-9 loss to the Jets on Sunday at the Meadowlands. So if you haven't yet had the chance to vent, and I've got a ton of emails here, most of them venting, and I promise you we're going to get to them here in just a couple of moments. But if you haven't had your chance now to nitpick and to vent, now that you've had 2 days to let this loss kind of fester, stew around in you a little bit, and maybe you're trying to look at it a little bit less emotionally than you were, say, 2 days ago at this time, great. Fire off the email. webradio@patriots.com is how you reach us. And, of course, the telephone number is 508-543-7482. 508-543-7482. And we'll talk about it. For instance, William sends me this email. He goes, John, please don't be right like that again. If Belichick says it was him or the players on the field, he is only trying to spare your feelings. It was your fault. Yeah, I'd love to take the blame for this one. He says, okay, tongue out of cheek and serious question. What the bleep? He said, Fred would say that word, but I trust you to catch yourself. Okay, tongue really out of cheek now. Is this what to expect, or is it like Peyton Manning's injury last year? You know, William, I'd like to be able to say that I could actually answer that question today. I don't think I can. Eric Scalavino from PFW, who will join us back in here for tomorrow and Thursday's program, he joins us normally in the opening hour of our playbook show. Eric said 2 weeks ago and repeated it last week. Undoubtedly, he's going to repeat it again tomorrow, and he probably should, because he said, at the bye week, if this team is sitting 5-2, will you be happy? And the first week of the season, I said no. And a lot of that is probably because I bought into the hype. You bought into the hype. A lot of us, most of us, almost all of us bought into the hype. Last week, I hedged a little bit because Eric asked the question again, because the team struggled and probably should have lost to Buffalo in the home opener, and I think we all realize that now. But he asked the question again. At the bye week, would you be happy with 5-2? Does 5-2 seem reasonable, plausible, acceptable? And I said, yes, but I still thought they were capable of doing better. Now that we're 1-1, now that this team is 1-1, and Dally's going to ask the question again, would you take 5-2 at the bye week now? Is there any one of you who wouldn't? Is this team even capable of ripping off, what, 6 straight wins? Or 5 straight wins and going 6-1 at the bye week rather than 5-2? Because that's the only way you're going to do better.
Damn right.
That's the only way you're going to do better than what it looks like right now. And you've still got a pretty tough road to hoe. You've got Atlanta this week at home. You got Baltimore. You got Tennessee. You got to play in London against Tampa. I mean, let's face it, it's not going to be easy. This is the tough stretch, the toughest stretch of the season. It comes before the bye week for this team. And when you're still trying to, you know, wean back into the fold, Tom Brady, I think we all realize now that, you know, our excitement over his returning was a little premature. You've already lost a key cog defensively. You actually have lost two for the entire season, because I'm going to throw Seymour into that mix. Treat it like an injury. You never had him. He was done before the season started. But that's two huge components on this defense, and the defense wasn't really even the problem on Sunday, with the exception of that opening drive of the third quarter. And really, really, can you pin it on the defense? You should probably pin it even more so on the special teams that allowed Leon Washington to the return to open up the second half. That put them in good field position. And then you get a busted play, and you get an accident, and you get a human mistake made by a Brandon Merriweather, and big play, and boom, they're down in your red zone already, ready to score. So they jumped on you. You held, man, you held Sanchez to 15 yards passing in the opening half. And then they blitz you like that. That tells me you're not mentally ready. You're just not ready to go. And that is not like this Patriots team. It is so un-Belichickian. It's so unpatriots-like. The Jets made adjustments at halftime. The Patriots, masters of adjustment, did not. That's what cost them the game on Sunday. They were out-adjusted. They were out-coached. They were out-played. They were out-emotioned. They were out-everything. And yet they only lost by seven. So if you want to look for the silver lining in this dark cloud right now, fact is that you went on the road, you played a team that is a little bit better than we all thought that they would be. Let's give the Jets some credit, much as it may be painful to do so. Give them a little credit. It's a good team. It's a team that was 9-7 a year ago, added some pretty important pieces of the puzzle. Always have loved Bart Scott. I think he was a tremendous offseason acquisition. Rex Ryan may have been the best offseason acquisition. Just what that team needed at the right time of their development. I think the Jets could easily be this year's Miami, you know, in terms of surprising some people, even though they really shouldn't surprise you a lot. I mean, they again, 9-7 last year, they weren't that far off. And yes, they did whack the Patriots here in Foxborough last year. How soon we forget. Remember Brett Favre? Remember him? Yeah, there's a guy you can't forget, right? Yep. Came in here and, you know, and outplayed Matt Cassel, outplayed that team, and they held on and they won. All right, webradio at patriots.com is how you reach us in the email inbox. 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. We start off on your email, your nitpicks for Nitpick Tuesday, coming up here inside the playbook.
At American Airlines, we know it seems like you're on the road almost as much as your favorite sports team. We know you've scheduled a business trip to a city where your team happens to be playing that night. And we know that on every trip, you inevitably forget to bring a toothbrush. But you never forget that old pair of socks you wear on game day to bring your team luck. We know for you, it's not just a seat on a flight to a place. It's a seat on a flight to your life. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, don't go yet, sir.
But the light turned green.
Well, you don't go till I say so. You play by my rules. My rules. Ball start, loss of 5 yards, still first down.
What are you talking about?
Unsportsmanlike conduct, 10 yards.
Unsportsmanlike is 15 yards.
Move the chains.
You are a crossing guard.
Personal foul, 15 yards.
And stop blowing that whistle.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Delay of game, but, 5 yards,
but
first down.
But you're not...
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services N.A. Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. Copyright 2009. Bank of America Corporation.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Man, it's football season. I mean, usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got razor-sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game, I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
Right, so, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
Just wanted you to feel like you were at the Jet Stadium.
Thank you. Yeah, that was pretty obnoxious, huh? Pretty obnoxious. At any rate, we welcome you back inside the playbook for a Tuesday. A nitpick Tuesday here on Patriots.com radio as the Pats unfortunately fell to the Jets 16-9 on Sunday. Tom Brady not able to register his 30th career comeback. Stopping two Patriots drives the Jets did in the final 5 minutes to get the win. Their first win against the Patriots at their home field since 2000. Yep, since 2000. Patriots offense held without a touchdown for the first time since a 21-0 shutout at Miami in 2006. Last time they did not score a touchdown. Okay, well, now, let's hit some of the emails that many of you have been kind enough to share with us. Quayo from Texas writes, "I've realized that the Pats are not making the halftime adjustments they used to be so good at anymore. Has this got anything to do with the lack of videotapes they don't make anymore?" Why did I know that that was going to come up at some point? I think he's actually asking this seriously. And no, that's not it at all. He says, or is it a matter of talent? I know it's dangerous territory, but no, it's a combination of several things. But no, it has nothing to do with the videotape because, again, when they were videotaping, it's almost impossible to turn around the videotape that they were shooting that was deemed to be illegal years ago or a couple of years ago, whenever it was. It's almost impossible to turn it around that quickly and use it, you know, to your advantage in the span of a 12 to 14 minute halftime. Can't do it. Can't do it. Even in today's day and age. I mean, you still have to go through a lot of videotape and you'd have to be able to edit together, and it would take longer than 12 minutes. I'm sorry. Just takes longer than 12 minutes, and you're talking to someone who spent part of his life editing videotape, all right? So I'm just telling you, it's impossible. You can't turn it around that quickly. No, I don't think, Quayo, that a lack of halftime adjustments has to do with videotapes or talent or anything else. I think it is that the Patriots have a mindset going on, all right? It's like, okay, this is what we want to do. This is what we want to accomplish. And I think, if anything, maybe some stubbornness has entered the equation. They think their way is the way, not just the right way, the only way. And until they get wrapped in the mouth a couple of times and realize that they need to make some adjustments, they're probably not going to. Maybe this Jets game is the wake-up call that this team needed. And I think, as a Patriots fan, you probably have to hope that that is the case. That this was a wake-up call that both sides of the football needed and that all of the members of the coaching staff needed. Todd writes, 4-3 at the bye, at the very best. That's what he thinks this team will be, 4-3 at the bye. I don't really like looking ahead at the schedule, Todd, but I'm gonna play along with you here just for a moment. Obviously, you're 1-1 now. You've got Atlanta next week. You've got Baltimore the week after. You're at Denver. Then you're home against Tennessee. And then, of course, you play Tampa in London before the bye week. And then after the bye week, it doesn't really get a whole lot easier. Miami, at Indy, Jets, at New Orleans, at Miami. I mean, frankly, the way the New Orleans is playing, Miami, you know, is going to be, you know, gunning for everything. They're 0-2, and they feel like they could be 2-0. You got the Jets in there. You got the Colts. I'm hard pressed to find an easy day. I don't think easy days in the NFL really exist any longer, regardless of who you're playing. But frankly, I think the Patriots' alleged so-called cream puffs on this schedule are not turning out to be that way. So the schedule, in effect, is going to prove to be much more difficult than I think it was originally projected to be. This all being said, because they're home games, the Patriots should win the next two. Baltimore is a little scary, although Baltimore, you know, I mean, they went on the road and they beat San Diego this week, right? Joe Flacco is going to be one of those guys that, you know, we could be talking around for many, many, many years now that he's beginning to get his NFL legs underneath him. But it's still at home. Then you play at Denver on October 11. That will be an emotional game for members of the Patriots, former members of the Patriots that are now in Denver, not the least of which is Josh McDaniel. Again, it's a game that they should win. Tennessee, then back here at home on Sunday, October 18. You know, I still think the Titans are a pretty good football team, but it's a home game. You should win it. And then, of course, you play Tampa. Tampa's been a disappointment, but I guess anything can really happen with both teams are forced to travel the distance that both teams are going to need to travel that week and play at Wembley Stadium. You know, and so games that you should win, all of them. Games that you should win, all of them. Games that you will win. Well, it's not none of them, but it's pretty hard to pick who you think they will win and who they won't win. Let's just say, you know, that they, you know, still takes them a couple of weeks to get back into gear. I could certainly see where you would come up with 4-3, Todd. But I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to do you one better than that. And I'm going to say that, and I'm going to give my boy Eric Scalavino, I'm going to give him his due, and I'm going to say 5-2. And that's what he said. He said it the last 2 weeks, again. This team is 5-2 at the bye week. Would you be happy? Initially, no. Last week, I hedged. Now, yeah, he's right.
We got to play him one day at a time.
That's right. As cliche as it is, that's exactly what you got to do. 5-2 at the bye week would be a good spot for this team. Chance to heal some of the walking wounded. Then you come back. You got Miami at home. Then you get to go out on the road and take on Indy. Showcase game, and then you get to get ready for the rematch against the Jets on a Sunday night, or a Sunday afternoon late, I should say. It's a 4:15 game. Then you go on the road for two, at New Orleans and at Miami. New Orleans is a Monday night game at the Superdome. Then you come back for Carolina, at Buffalo, Jacksonville, and at Houston to end the season. That's a tough stretch between now and December the 6th. There's just not a breather in there. Doesn't exist. Does not exist. Not a breather. So, yeah, I'd take 5-2. I absolutely would. I think they're certainly capable of it. They're capable of 6-1. But 5-2, I think I'd have to agree with at this stage of the game. Okay, Shane says, hello, John. Why is it so hard for the Patriots to generate a pass rush? They have Pro Bowl quality D linemen, but why can't they get to the passer like other players? Don't say it's because of Seymour, because they couldn't do it when they had him either. This is Shane in Miami. Well, you know, there are multiple reasons for I think your frustrations here, Shane. Yeah, they have Pro Bowl quality D linemen, but I think part of it has to do with the fact that the defensive linemen, except in certain situations, are supposed to be, you know, the Patriots linemen are trained as two-gap players. And that system, trying to break it down as simply as even my addled brain can break it down, is basically a containment system where you hold up guys, you fulfill a role, and then you allow the linebackers and those coming in behind on the play to make the tackle. Now, what I don't know is whether or not they stay with two gap and technique when they actually have a pass rush called. I would think no, but then again, you know, it doesn't seem to me to be that easy to switch back and forth from. But this is a team that has been, you know, has made its bread and butter over the last few years in a 3-4 defense, with the three down linemen up front playing a two-gap system of football, allowing the linebackers to come in and make the plays, for the most part. The only thing I can tell you is that they just aren't asked to do what maybe we would like them to do. Now, it may very well be that they have worked on this in practice, and again, we don't get a chance to see a lot of that. We're only allowed to see what the first 5-10 minutes of practice, and then we're out the door. And a lot of that is simply because, you know, it's stretching or whatever. Don't get to see a lot of it. Could very well be that this is something that they're trying, that they're still in the process of trying to change the mindset on. I hope so. Because it's clear that, you know, they need somebody to put some pressure on the quarterback, the opposing quarterback. They need somebody that can get in the backfield. They need somebody to make a play. They need a playmaker. And they lost the playmakers on this team when they let go Richard Seymour. And I am going to say Seymour because, yes, they could do it better than they could do it now. The man had a career-high 8.5 sacks last year, Shane. They lost it when they let Mike Vrabel go because he was clearly one of the best edge rushers. Now, it may very well be they let them go because they thought that, well, and I think we all realize this, the thought process was their best days had passed them by. And so let's get something for them while they still have some value. Now, to get a second-round pick for Vrabel and Castle, that was just dumb. That was a mistake. To let Seymour go like they did, even though it was a first-round draft pick, 2 years on down the line, I don't like the move. You know, I've said that many times. I'm not going to like that move at any point this year. I don't care if this team rips off 15 straight wins, 16 straight wins, 17, 18, and 1. I don't care what they were. It's still a bad move for the time. My opinion. I'm not paid to make the personnel decisions here. I am paid to give you my opinion. That's all. So, based on my observations, you've lost too much of the ability already, Shane, that you had last year to rush the passer. It's gone. It doesn't exist. Now you've got to have new guys step in, and they just haven't gotten it yet. I'm a little disappointed in what I've seen thus far in guys like Jarvis Green, Ty Warren, not so much in Vince Wilfork because that's not his necessary role. But I'm disappointed in those guys so far, and I hope that can somehow change. I'm not sure it will, but I hope it can. Muhammad writes, he says, why, not counting this year's draft, why has the team's drafting been so poor? From 05 to 08, these are the players who are still with the team. Mankins, Kazer, Sanders, Maroney, Gostowski, Merriweather, Richardson, Mayo, Wheatley, Crable, Will Height, Slater. Of these players, Maroney, Richardson, Wheatley, Crable, and Slater probably aren't going to be on the team next year or contribute this year. No rookie drafted this year will start. Not counting players from trades, Welker and Moss, 6 starters in 4 years from the draft, including a kicker. Why? Well, probably because they didn't feel like the draft. This is part of the reason why they've been trading down from ones to get twos. They felt like the quality was not what they liked it to be with the higher draft picks. So rather than have to pay somebody money, they were, you know, willing to trade down, feeling more comfortable in paying a second round pick for someone that was probably going to be a marginal player. It's clear the Patriots made a decision that they just didn't feel like the overall depth of the draft and where they were drafting at those positions in this draft was worth it to them. Now, yeah, they've made some, shall we say, iffy decisions. Obviously, you mentioned a few here, Muhammad, in terms of Wheatley and Crable. Haven't been able really to get on the field much. Richardson, I'd say, you know, certainly between Mankins, Kazer, Sanders, Maroney. I said last year he could very well be a bust, and looks like I'm going to be right, unless somehow he can turn it around. Slater, obviously, it's a crapshoot. Based on what you think you saw, the tape and the interviews and the tryouts and the workouts and everything that you do, you take a guy and sometimes it just doesn't work out. It's an inexact science. In the past, the Patriots have been very exact, or at least largely exact, in their selections, and less so the last couple of years. That's a little bit of a disturbing trend. Why is this defense at times so vanilla, writes James from Vancouver. Why can't we instill more creative blitz packages and take more risk on third and long situations? Oftentimes in these instances, we're playing zone coverage with conventional four-man rushes that we get more often than not burned on. It's incredibly frustrating. Well, in that end, I really believe that this team is still learning how to play with a four-man front. And a lot of times in zone coverage, you know, they're a little, I think they're afraid of getting burned. They end up getting burned anyway. I'd love to have a couple of man shut down corners. I don't think this team has that, and I don't think this team believes that it has that, which is why you see them play zone coverage. And in zone coverage, you must have a pass rush. And if you don't have the pass rush, you're dead. And that's kind of what's happening right now. So a couple of things have to happen. Either A, somehow these guys have got to get better at man coverage, or B, they've got to figure out a way to get a pass rush going, and C, they probably will need both. James also says, in addition, our offense is getting quite predictable. Shotgun, quick screen passes to Welker and the like, and three wideout sets aren't proving to be that effective anymore. In other words, the passing game needs to be accompanied by a running game. You think? Yes, the offensive line is finesse-oriented and has been failing to hold their ground as of late for the run, but that doesn't mean that we should abandon the run. I'd also like to add that we aren't using Maroney effectively. He will never be a bull rusher, as he needs space to be effective. But in all these years, they have yet to adjust plays to his strengths. James, I couldn't agree more. I think Lawrence Maroney is terribly miscast for what this team's blocking schemes and techniques are proving that they have. You're absolutely right when you say he needs space to run. He is not a creative kind of guy. So, to me, a guy like Maroney is going to be good with a team that's going to do a lot of counter trays, a lot of pulling guards and tackles, sweeps, edge running, you know, like I said, counter trays, draws, what have you, where he can find that little crack of light and just bang, hit it. But if he's forced to dance, which we've seen him do, he doesn't do it very well. That's a good email, James, and a pretty good observation by you, I'd have to say. Adam says, I thought Greg Lewis was one of our best offensive players in the preseason. I was stunned when I heard he was cut, so much so I got my eyes checked up when I read it. They even chose him over Sam Aiken. I don't know what Bill was thinking, but I bet he regrets his thoughts. He probably regrets a lot of things. I don't know if that's one of them. I was also surprised. I think it all came down to, you know, a roster spot and what they thought they needed at the time, and I think they saw upside and potential in a guy like Aiken and or Julian Edelman as opposed to Lewis. That's all I can tell you. That one puzzles me more than anything. Well, not more than anything, but certainly it ranks up there. Joel and Merrimack. I'm not a sky is falling kind of guy, especially just after two games, but these first two games do beg the question, at what point do we start worrying? If the Pats lose to Atlanta, I know that not all defenses have the ability to pull off what the Jets did, but we will be facing enough of that type of defense to keep us out of the playoffs if our offense does not improve. I do feel that the ship will be righted, but I'm just not sure when that will be. As far as play calling goes, I'm not really impressed with either side of the coin. 2 weeks in a row, I've seen opposing quarterbacks standing safely in the pocket with very little pressure on them. And I've seen Tom Brady picking himself up off the ground too many times. In practice, does Brady work on passing on the run? If not, maybe he should. You know, that's a good question. We don't get to see a lot of that, I'll be honest with you. Nobody gets to see it. Tom Brady is not a rollout kind of guy, unfortunately. But you know what? Wouldn't it be nice to see that once or twice in the repertoire? See, this is where I think they actually miss a guy like Josh McDaniels. Because I don't think a guy like McDaniels is afraid to put something like that into the playlist. Anybody know who's calling the plays? Does anybody know who's calling the plays? Bill Belichick's calling the plays. Do I need to say any more? Anyway, I will continue to smile and drink the Kool-Aid, at least for now, but if the guys lose to Atlanta, the drink may start to sour a little. No doubt about that. Zach says, does anyone think Sanchez is going to have a sophomore slump? good one. And then he says, I got to say I hate him, but when we're not playing him, Manning is very entertaining to watch. He killed Miami last night. Yes, he did. Just shows you that Peyton Manning is still the old pro. He's still capable of doing a lot. Nobody thinks that he has near the team built up around him as he's had in previous years, and yet they found a way to win on the road at Miami last night. It's a hell of a performance, I thought, really, to be honest with you, especially for a team that only had the football 15 stinking minutes the whole game. Was that incredible or what? Just incredible. I mean, Miami's game plan was outstanding. It was outstanding. Ball control, they ran roughshod. They ran roughshod over the Colts defense, and yet the Colts bent, might have even said cracked, but didn't break completely. You know, put the blame on last night's loss squarely on Miami's defense. Squarely on Miami's defense. Let's see what else we got here. Chris. Let's see. Love the show. Keeps me connected with my roots and up to date with the Pats. Thank you. Just wanted to comment on all these people and radio personnel who call themselves fans but seem to have lost what it means to have faith and the ability to back your home team, even when times are tough. One loss, one close game we should have lost but won, and everybody is going is giving up on Brady, Belichick, and what it means to be a Patriot. We have all the guys, we have all of the weapons we need, and if you think Bill isn't in the game room getting geared up and rallying the troops to make this thing work, you're crazy. It is not how you start, it is how you finish. Let us not forget when the Red Sox were up 12 games with 12 games left. No way they can't win the ALCS, and they don't. Or when the Sox were down to the Yankees with one out left, no way we can win, and we do. Vinatieri's kick against the Raiders. It may be a new team with a new look, but I will say that I will not give up on this team till the fat lady sings, and we are officially eliminated from the playoffs, which ain't happening. Chris, I should invite you, I think, to give the next halftime speech. Sounds to me like you would qualify. Some good emotion in there. Nathan says, what a disappointing loss. One thing that I noticed, other than the penalties, which rarely affect us that much, was the special teams. It seemed like the Jets consistently started their drive from the 30, 35, and 40, while we seemed to be stuck at the 15 and 20-yard line at the best with a few exceptions. What do you think? No doubt. And I'm glad you brought it up. First of all, the penalties. You know, the Patriots have always prided themselves in being not only an efficient team, but a smart team and a disciplined team. And they have not been disciplined through the first 2 weeks of this season. And 11 penalties for 89 yards against the Jets is completely and totally unsatisfactory. Now, whether or not, you know, those delay of game penalties were a fault of, you know, the fans in attendance or what, ultimately it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. The Patriots had all of the precautions taken. I mean, you know, they had the grease board out. They had their plays listed on their wrist. They had everything to take advantage of the situation so they could prepare properly in case the noise got to be deafening. Noise was fine. It was great. The Jets fans did a good job. Bravo for them. Bravo. But that is not the reason the Jets won the game, okay? Just not. There will never, ever, I'm sorry to say this, and Jason may be mad at me because we always like to stir fans' emotion here in Foxborough. There's never a game when the fans should ever be a factor. If a team lets the fans in the stands be a factor, shame on them. Brian found another drop. Good job, Brian. The fans should never be a factor, ever. That's all I'm going to say. If they were, shame on the Patriots. The special teams obviously had one noticeable glitch, and that was the opening kickoff to the second half, third quarter kick that Washington put them in good field position. And then you have one human error, one mistake, and then bang, you know, three plays later, you're a touchdown, and you're, you know, it's a 10-9 game. After you go into the locker room thinking, you have this thing pretty much in control. That's why you didn't see any adjusting. Although there still should always be adjusting. But this team didn't feel like it needed to adjust. They had a 9-3 lead. They felt like they were in control of the situation, mentally, physically, everything. Felt like, you know what, we should probably be up 21-3. So they'll make a couple of corrections here and there, and boom, you know, we'll have things under control to start the second half. And then bang, special teams let you down. Bang, defensive mistake lets you down. Bang, Jets are in the end zone. Touchdown, you're down 10-9. Different game. So, Patriots are to be blamed there. There's no doubt about that. Mark in Hartlepool, UK. Offense better bleep and get better before you guys play over here in London. I don't want my only chance to see you guys live at Wembley ruined. Okay, Mark. I'll make sure that I pass that along. Jeez, goodness knows that we want to make sure that this team is ready to go so you can see a better game on, you know, in October. That's, you know, that'd be great. I want to make sure that you're not disappointed in any way. John, our friend in Orange, Connecticut. Or no, this is different, John. This is, that's Howard in Orange, Connecticut. Here's John in South Carolina who says, When I think about the game, the thing I'm worried about the most are the penalties. I think the mistakes on defense will get better, and I think the mistakes from Brady will get better. I'm not sure about Galloway, but it's too early to tell. I will tell you, he ain't got it. There, is that good? Do we think the holding calls were bad luck or a trend? I don't think the O deserves the beating they take by the fans, but I was wondering if the holding calls were a sign of them getting beat or the refs just calling it closer than they used to. Probably a little bit of both, John. That's actually a pretty good observation by you. Yeah, I think it's a combination of both. I give some credit to the defense. But, yes, I also believe that that when a team is put in a situation where they know the pass blocking is coming, officials are looking for it a little bit more. I do believe that to be the case. And you can take a lot of the stress off yourself by being a better running team. And the Patriots right now are pathetic as a running team, and they shouldn't be. They just shouldn't be. Secondly, how can we get the Patriots fans to be as loud as the Jets fans? I know I shouldn't talk because I can't make it to the games. I remember games back in the old stadium where the refs threatened to call a penalty against the Pats because the fans were too loud. How do we get that back? Well, we're not resurrecting Foxborough Stadium. That I can tell you. I think we need to challenge the fans to be louder than ever. Not sure if the people running the sound system can help. Maybe they can help get the crowd going. I don't know, Brian, what do you think? Am I slacking? We need to start playing the air raid signal a little bit louder.
Worked on Sunday.
Okay. Does anybody want to do what the Jets did, or would you rather do your own thing? I mean, come on. You know? Like I said, the fans should never, ever be a factor. And if they are, shame on you for allowing them to be. That being said, sure, having noise in the stadium and having a team that having emotion more than anything, it's more about the emotion of the fans than it is about the noisiness of the fans. And I think that those are two separate things. You can feel emotion. You can get by the noise, but you can feel emotion. And if the fans are emotionally into it, if the fans are not fat and sassy, as I like to say, complacent, in other words, then I think fans can be a factor because the players can feed off of that a little bit.
Do you think that the Jets defense was feeding off the crowd, or was the crowd feeding off the Jets defense getting after Brady?
I think it was a little bit of both. And I think the Jets were probably feeding off the fact that they had already whipped themselves up into a frenzy during the week. You know, and they basically talked themselves into playing a good game. You know, they kind of put their butt in a crack, and then that's exactly what happened. They backed it up. It's a good job. Absolutely good job. All right, let's take another timeout. We've got a lot more emails to get into here, so keep them coming. Webradio@patriots.com. It is a Nitpick Tuesday. So I want you to take one aspect of the game, one thing you really didn't like, one thing you may have noticed. Maybe you have a question about something that is related to the game but not football, whatever it may be. But we're nitpicking here, and I want you to present it to me and ask what you like. It could have been a good thing, could have been a bad thing, could have been an unrelated thing, but we're nitpicking. Nitpicking over the Jets and the 16-9 loss on Sunday. Brian Lowe from Patriots Today will join us at some point in time here in the next hour of the program. And then, kids, we'll turn the corner, put this one behind us, or at least until November the 22nd when the Jets return here. And we'll worry about Atlanta. All coming up inside the playbook.
At American Airlines, we know it seems like you're on the road almost as much as your favorite sports team. We know you've scheduled a business trip to a city where your team happens to be playing that night. And we know that on every trip, you inevitably forget to bring a toothbrush. But you never forget that old pair of socks you wear on game day to bring your team luck. We know for you, it's not just a seat on a flight to a place. It's a seat on a flight to your life. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey! Don't go yet, sir.
But the light turned green.
Well, you don't go till I say so. You play by my rules. My rules? Ball start, loss of 5 yards, still first down.
What are you talking about?
Unsportsmanlike conduct, 10 yards.
Unsportsmanlike is 15 yards.
Move the chains!
You are a crossing guard.
Personal foul, 15 yards.
And stop blowing that whistle.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots Banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warmups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots Banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Delay of game,
but,
5 yards,
but I,
first down.
But you're not...
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services N.A. Bank of America N.A. member FDIC. Copyright 2009. Bank of America Corporation.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Man, it's football season. I mean, usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got razor-sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game. I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
Right, so, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
Hour number two inside Patriots Playbook for a Nitpick Tuesday here on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook, and we welcome you inside the Playbook. The Patriots are 1-1, and we'll take on the 2-0 Atlanta Falcons coming up this Sunday here at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. It's a 1 o'clock Eastern time kickoff as we sort of ruminate and resonate over the 16-9 loss to the Jets on Sunday at the Meadowlands in Jersey. Asking you for your nitpicks. Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. Some aspect of the game that you have a question about, something you really liked, something you really did not like. We're basically just kind of, talking it over again, try to get it all out of the system so everybody can move on, which we all need to do. Nick says, good opening. Run the ball. If the running game is a threat, they can't do what they did Sunday. When someone is sending 6 to 8, all you need is a small crack and you are going to get a big game. I can't understand why they did not run the ball. If the running game is going, Brady's job is going to get a lot easier. And I have one question. Do you think the young defensive players they have now are good enough to learn and develop, making it a matter of time? Or do we need more help? Well, I think that's the $64,000 question, Nick. Honestly, let me sit here and let me think about it for about 2 seconds. I think that they're good enough. The problem here is that they may not have the time that they need in order to become better. Does that make sense to you? I mean, you know, ultimately, if they don't start making plays, then obviously they're not going to be good enough. So I think those two items that you asked about sort of go hand in hand. You need time to be a good player. Otherwise, you're not drafting well enough. And here's the problem. The Patriots look for the bargain guys, those second, third, fourth round guys. And, you know, they sort of eschew paying the top round guys. But then again, you know, you got to do that from time to time, like they should have done this year. They should have paid Seymour. They should have opened it up and they should have paid both him and Vince Wilfork. But nope, they deemed one expendable. Mistake. That's all I'll say. Mistake. Dagmar in Miami on the line here inside the playbook. Dagmar, what's up with you, pal?
How's it going, John?
How's it going with you?
Good, good. First time I call. I've emailed you before. This is the first time I call you. I've called before the other show.
Yeah.
Good to be back in the season.
Well, I'm glad that you're with us.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I have a couple of issues that I want to go over with this team.
Yep.
Starting in the off season.
Yep.
With the movement that you mentioned before of trading Brable and Castle. I believe, if I don't recall bad, that it was a second-round pick or first-round pick.
Which one now? Seymour?
No. Brable, Castle.
They got a second-round pick.
The second-round pick. Translate into Chris Butler or these older guys, the defensive linemen that we got, Ron Brace.
Mm-hmm.
Am I mistaken on that one?
I'd have to look at the list again of what the picks are, but I don't think it was for a pick. I'm not sure it was for a pick this year.
Oh, okay.
I think it's for a future pick.
Other than that, just to close on that topic, mm-hmm. I think we end up a little bit on disadvantage on that trade.
Okay.
I don't think we got the most out of it, since we gave one of our main figures in defense on what it looks to be a good option for any franchise to have a franchise quarterback in
mm-hmm.
Matt Castle.
Mm-hmm.
He really had a good year with us. The second topic is with Seymour gone, I definitely started to have doubts of these front line on the defense. Since we've been for a couple of years already a 3-4 scheme-based defense, having Seymour leaving this organization, I think it opens up a lot of, you know, the space for a lot of, you know, debate there.
Right.
Because either we have enough talent to cover that hole that he's definitely leaving, and I'm telling you, even if you have Seymour, not only in this team, in any other team, you have that guy leaving your organization, you have a big hole to fill. And I'm one of those that thinks that he didn't achieve everything that we actually could have expected from him, but he wasn't even, you know, underachieving that much either, because he had a couple of years that he had to deal with injuries and all
but after all,
he was a good player for us.
So, Digmar, do you think he was an underachiever while he was here?
A little bit, but I think he was a star. He was a star in the team. We may have probably wanted a little bit more out of him, but since he was injured and it's nothing that he can control, and neither do we. So I do believe that opening up that spot in the defensive front, it leaves us very vulnerable.
It does.
Facing the running game.
Yeah.
And we just face the Jets. Wait until we face Miami. Wait until we face some other teams that had a strong rushing game. I mean, not for taking anything away from Washington and Jones from the Jets, because they're really good running backs, but basically they are not a top rushing or top rank rushing team.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're gonna have a couple of tough games on the road. Even if our defense only allowed under 20 games, you know,
yep.
we still have to produce. The last topic that I want to talk about is how do you feel about having Joey Galloway filling up the spot that Jabbar Gaffney was doing or was, you know, had in this team for the last 3 or 4 years. And I think it's a very, very sensible spot, you know, because right now you think number one receiver, Randy Moss, we had it on Sunday. Number two was Welker. He was out.
Yep.
We had to come up with an option for him. In this case, was Joey Galloway. And honestly, I think he could catch a couple of those passes that he dropped. A veteran wide receiver like him,
yeah.
he should have, you know, play better. That's my point.
Here's my number one. I'd have to say that I don't like the move thus far because I do think that at least Jabari Gaffney seemed to be able to run the right routes, and it's pretty clear to most everybody right now that he and Tom Brady are not on the same page. That it will have to change rather quickly, otherwise he'll be out of here on the next train, to Attleboro, so to speak. So I that's a disappointment. I think they kept the wrong guy. I think they should have let him go and should have kept Greg Lewis. That's my thought. I was as surprised as anybody when I saw that. But I think part of the reason is because Joey Galloway impressed them in the offseason with his speed, that he still has the ability to separate himself from defenders that I don't think anybody really thought he still had. But we haven't seen that ability. Why? Because nothing has been thrown his way to allow him to take advantage of that ability. So there are two things going on here. Number one, he's not on the same page with Tom Brady in terms of the playbook. Number two, plays aren't being called for him. So something's got to change. Something has to change. And maybe the plays aren't being called for him because he doesn't know what they are. Whatever happened to just drawing it up in the grass and saying, here's a stick, here's a bottle cap, you go this way, and you go that way. Yeah, everybody go long on this one. Ready, set, break, and whatever happened to that? Why can't you just tell a guy like Galloway, if he's got that kind of speed, to just, hey, Joey, go out there and I'll get it to you.
There you go.
That's what I heard.
And when I make sure when I get it to you, you catch the damn ball.
That's exactly right.
I
know. You're right.
I mean, a receiver like him, he should know better.
Yeah.
He should know how to adjust and know how to be open
ready
to touch that ball.
That's right.
Especially on a road game.
That's exactly right. Dagmar, thanks for the phone call. I sure appreciate
it. Okay, John. Nice to talk to you.
All right. Nice to talk to you, too. Make sure you call in anytime. 508-543-7482 is how you get a hold of us here in the program. Back to the email inbox. Andrew in London says, I watched the game on Sunday and had to say I was very disappointed after what I thought was a reasonably good game against Buffalo. I don't understand how an offense can go from smooth and well-disciplined to the mess against the Jets, and it can't just be down to the absence of Wes Welker. One of the main reasons for the incredible 2000 season was the extremely solid O-line. I mean, the Jets' pass rush was good, but this O-line must have faced pass rushers that were much more quality than this. Is this still just rust from the offseason, or is this something more long-term? I don't know that we can answer that, Andrew. I think you're asking a question that, somehow, some way, we're all sort of asking right now. A lot of it has, believe it or not, to do with Welker, yes. Because there's a certain comfort level in the fact that, hey, if we need a tough yard or two or ten or what have you, Wes is the kind of guy that can get that. And when you have that comfort factor involved, guys are usually more relaxed and kind of let the game come to them rather than they press to make a play because they know they need to pick it up in the absence of a teammate. And sometimes when you press, it doesn't go well. I'm just saying sometimes. I am a little disappointed in the O-line, and quite frankly, I think it is one of the things that is underachieving about the offense right now. Not just Brady, not just the running game. The offensive line gets thrown into the mix as well. Chris Baker caught all these passes in the preseason. Have they thrown to him yet? I know he's caught a couple of – what does Chris Baker have? Let me look at the stats here. What does Baker have thrown his way thus far? I'm going to look for it right here. Here we go. Chris Baker, receiving. 2 catches for 8 yards. That's outstanding. What happened to throwing to him? What the hell is up with that? What happened to the tight end being the safety valve?
2 touchdowns in the first preseason game.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, we've gotten way too predictable on offense. It's got to be Moss. It's got to be Welker. Way too predictable. Again, it goes back to the play calling, people. Play calling. Forget the execution, which has been rusty, let's face it. Brady has not been Tom Brady, and I went through all of that and some of the reasons behind that in the opening hour of the program. So if you just joined us, you'll have to download the podcast, damn it, because I'm just not going to say it again. just having fun. But still, it's play calling. Play calling. Confident in the ability to do that stuff. Shane in Miami writes back. He says, John, you've made it very clear that you think trading Seymour was a mistake. I totally disagree. If he had 8.5 sacks last year, I will have to take your word for it because I don't remember a single one of them. Well, the statistics tell me that, Shane. So, I mean, it's in black and white right in front of my face. Matter of fact, can you remember a single big play that Richard made in the last 3 years? I cannot remember one. I think he's had a couple of fumble recoveries. I think he won for a touchdown, too, did he not? If he's such an impact player that everyone thinks he is, then he should have done more. Losing Seymour is the least of their problems. Ah, Shane, my narrow-minded one. What can I do to bring you over to the dock side? Fact is, you got to open your eyes and see it, Shane. Lines play as a unit. And when a piece of the unit is missing, the line as a whole is going to struggle. It happens on the offensive side, and it happens on the defensive side. Richard Seymour did his job very well. He is a two-gap player and still had 8.5 sacks last year. Statistically speaking, of course. It's right here in black and white. Okay? So, you know, if you don't think he did the job and you like the pick for a 2011 selection, the trade for 2011 selection, that we're not going to reap any benefits for two more years at least, okay, that's fine. Then you can go off and run your football team right into the ground. How's that? Let's see what else we have here. Drew in Stillwater, New York. John and Eric. Well, I'll leave it for Eric, but he won't be here till tomorrow, Drew. Can you please check the tickets for expiration of the bandwagon fans? This is a 16-game season. Stop with all the bandwagon fan emails. I remember when 8-8 was the norm, not 11-5. The only problem I had with the game was that damn siren and the fact that we should have a damn lighthouse foghorn or something sound at our games. The team is rebuilding itself, and Tom is still in a state of PTSD. Yep. From last year, and who can blame him? Yep. Once this wears off, all the bandwagon fans will want to jump on board again, but they need to shut up and move on to their next bandwagon team. I'm trying to figure out, Drew, if you're a Patriots fan or not. Oh, thanks for the email. That's all right. Yeah, that's true. You make some good points. Make some good points. I don't know. Do we have a lighthouse foghorn? I don't think so.
No.
Should have some kind of a lighthouse foghorn.
It's your voice.
Oh, I'm the foghorn? Okay. Something like that. We should have something like that at the stadium, right? No, I guess not. Preston from Brockton. I think we should have cut Crable a long time ago. He was a waste of a draft pick and a waste of talent. In the history of drafts, I think Bill's record for picking talent hasn't lived up to expectation, but his talent for looking at veterans should have great recognition. One more thing. Why did we ever cut Terrence Nunn? He's a much better prospect considering his age and talent than Joey Galloway. Nunn's on the practice team. He's on the practice squad. And frankly, you know what? If they decide that Joey isn't going to get it, which I'm beginning to have my doubts now, I hope I'm wrong. Okay, like last week, I hope I'm wrong, but I'm not sure I'm going to be. But if they decide this, you know, in the next few weeks and decide to give Galloway his walking papers, Nunn's the first guy they should go get. Call him up and activate him from the practice squad. Don't worry about going out and getting somebody. Activate Nunn from the practice squad. I'm telling you, the kid can play. I saw it in the preseason. I saw enough of him to know that he's got some speed. He's got some guts. He's got some hands. You know, yeah, he went to Nebraska, you know, and, you know, until, what, the last two or three years, I guess, they really weren't known much as a pass-first team. Of course, I think everybody now in college football is a pass-first team, but
He was there with Bill Callahan, though.
Well, yeah, that's when they turned into a, you know, drop-back-and-throw team, you know, rather than the, you know, I-back, you know, power-back formation, you know, that, you know, made so famous under, you know, Solich and Osborne and Bob Devaney and all of them that coached Nebraska to the, you know, tradition that they at least once existed in. But, yeah, Nunn's the kind of guy that's got to – yeah, I agree. They got to go get him. Activate him and let him have a shot. John in South Carolina writes back, okay, they had two designed rollout plays with Brady during the Jets game. They were not designed to be rollouts. It sure looked it. Okay, well, I didn't see them, but okay, you know what? That's great. At least they put it, you know, into the repertoire. Now let's see if we can find a way to, you know, be productive with something like that. He says, okay, college man, make a prediction. TCU versus Clemson. Seriously? Let me guess which side you're on, being in South Carolina. Now, maybe you can guess which side I'm on, being a native of Fort Worth, Texas. Frogs, baby. Frogs. There you go. That's all I'm going to say. Jason. Jason from Niagara Falls here. Wanted to pick your brains regarding our offensive line. It cost us the Super Bowl. Tom was hurried 15 times, I believe, on Sunday. Are there adjustments, perhaps even something as rash as replacing some of the starters, like Matt Light? He said, you could really make my wife's day if you said, hi, Amy. Okay. Hi, Amy! Love the show. Keep on keeping on. Hope that made her day. Made mine. Thanks, Jason. Adjustments, yes. Something as rash as replacing some of the starters. I'm not ready to make that call just yet. Because this team let a guy that I thought was one of the most vastly underrated players on the entire roster, they let him go before the season started in Russ Hochstein. Because he could do a little bit of everything. And he did most everything fairly well. He wasn't a starter per se, but he was a great piece of the puzzle. And when they let him go and they traded him away for another future draft pick, well, then the thought was is that they felt solid enough about their offensive line that they no longer needed the X factor, the guy that could float up and down. They felt good enough about what they had. And if the offensive line is struggling, which I think admittedly they are with a lot of the other pieces to the puzzle on the offense right now, I think I'm ready to give them the benefit of the doubt and say, all right, maybe they need a couple more weeks to get it into gear here. But I do believe that by the bye week, you know, after they've played seven games, and depending upon what their record might be, I do believe that it might be time to make some changes during that off week, one way or the other, depending upon what that record is. Anything worse than 4-3, you might see some changes. You just might see them. Whether they're 4-3 or 3-4 or 2-5 or what have you doesn't mean the season's over, although 2-5 will probably be close. But 4-3 or 3-4 doesn't mean the season's over by any stretch. I think the Jets will end up coming back to the division a little bit. I think Miami's better than 0-2, although it doesn't surprise me that, you know, they're coming back to earth a little bit. Certainly believe the Patriots are capable, and I even think Buffalo's capable. And Buffalo's, you know, on the board with a win, too, if they're spanking Tampa Bay this past weekend. So, not ready yet to make the wholesale changes. But I think most of these guys probably feel like they're on notice anyway. Let me sneak one more in here, and then we'll move on. Nitpick. John, this comes from... it comes from John. I couldn't agree more with you that Brady will need time to get back up to speed from last year's injury and missing a year. But shouldn't Belichick and the Pats coaching staff know better than anyone Brady's limitations and game plan to run more or use more screens or draws rather than let Brady throw, and throw with inconsistency? The Pats dominated the time of possession, and the final score is only 16-9. So did we need to throw that often with Brady obviously getting hurried and off the mark from the start? I'm a 45-year Pats fan, so I'm here for the duration, good, bad, or indifferent. Interesting point. However, my biggest gripe or nitpick, since this is a nitpick Tuesday, so far is that the offense just doesn't seem to show any sense of urgency to score, almost as if the offense just expects to make its move in the fourth quarter. Yes, as they did against Buffalo in week one, but obviously can't expect that kind of a miracle every week, as we saw in week two. Week two, three first half trips to the red zone, three field goals proving costly. Seems like first down is wasted, a run for one or two or three. Then a short pass or incompletion on second down, and we're quickly in third down mode, and that will ultimately stall a drive and force the team to punt or settle for 3 points. Peyton Manning and the Colts proved last night that each offensive possession is a scoring opportunity, and they were thinking touchdown on every possession. They went right after the Dolphins and put them on their heels. Wow. Okay, good points all. And I'm going to go back to another common theme for today's show. Play calling. Play calling. Brian Lowe from Patriots Today is also play calling. What's up, Brian?
How you doing? Calling lots of plays today, absolutely.
What's happening? What are your thoughts?
Not too much.
What are your thoughts on Sunday? Are you ready to move on?
Ready to move on. I mean, you know, it was definitely an ugly performance. It wasn't exactly what I expected going in there. You never expect Tom Brady leading an offense to zero touchdowns. And, you know, I mean, I thought there were a bunch of factors involved and some that I I think could be ironed out. Some that are going to be tougher, but you know, very discouraging day for the defense. I'm sorry, for the offense. A few encouraging elements to the defense, although they still really don't have a really big playmaking ability. And, you know, they got a lot of work to do because they've got some high-flying offenses coming in, including this week. So, you know, really an ugly performance, really one that they need to move on from, but they definitely need to break down the film on this one and figure out, boy, what can we do better from this?
Well, I think it was certainly part of the equation here yesterday and even into today, trying to figure out how to get better. I mean, there's so many areas that you can attack. It's really hard to pick one. You know, it seems like a lot of the nitpicks, you know, for us today have to do with the fact that this team is just woefully underachieved offensively. And pick any facet of the offense, running game, yeah, offensive line, Tom Brady, wide receivers, Welker being out. I mean, play calling has been my biggest, you know, nitpick today. I just think that it's been unimaginative. I think they're missing Josh McDaniels' you know, ability to kind of shoot from the hip at times. And, you know, even though there may have been an instance or two where Brady was rolling out, I think, you know, on certain plays, and we all know that that's not his forte, but still, you need to find a way to keep a defense thinking rather than reacting. And all the Jets did, I thought, was react. I don't think they had to stop and think one little bit about the Patriots and what the Patriots were presenting to them. And the Patriots need to be dangerous on offense again with their philosophy.
Well, I fully agree. I mean, on virtually every play, I mean, I think with the exception of a third and one sneak and, you know, there were maybe two or three exceptions, they ran out there with three wide receivers, Randy Moss, Joey Galloway, and Julian Edelman, and then one running back and one tight end. Well, those three wide receivers, I mean, certainly Brady has a rapport with Moss. It certainly wasn't there that day. But Joey Galloway and Julian Edelman are brand-new guys that really Brady has very little chemistry with. With Galloway, I think he's been a disappointment through the preseason and training camp. And I think even though, you know, while he made a couple of plays the other day, there were more negative plays, I thought, than positive. And then with Julian Edelman, I mean, what are you going to expect? The guy was a seventh-round draft pick. He played a different position than receiver in college. And his head had to be spinning completely because not only was it his first game, he was playing virtually every snap. And they were using a different sort of play-calling system than they'd ever used before. So what were you going to expect out of that? But I agree with you on the play-calling and the unimaginative nature of it. They were very predictable. And I thought they would have had a little more success running the ball because they I thought they would run the ball more because they were having a little bit of success, at least a decent yards per carry when they were running it. It would have certainly helped in terms of time of possession and keeping the Jets on their heels, as you said, and just mixing it up a little bit. And, you know, I was definitely one who, coming into the season, you know, last week before the Bills game, I did not think this offense was going to be at 2007 level right off the bat.
Right. Well, you know,
I thought there would be some moments of struggle. In fact, last week's game against Buffalo, you know, I didn't think it would play out exactly the way it did. I thought they would win in a struggle, which they did. But I thought this week we'd start seeing some signs, as there often are, against the Jets at the Giants Stadium, that the offense is getting back into rhythm. We certainly didn't see that. And, you know, I think not having Wes Welker, while you can't say right there that's why they lost the game, I definitely think there were some plays and some opportunities that Julian Edelman had that he wasn't able to capitalize on that Wes Welker would have. If they played the exact same game plan and Welker was in there instead of Edelman, I think this was a game where Welker probably would have had 13 or 14 catches for 115 yards and maybe would have gotten into the end zone on that play in the red zone where Julian Edelman was heading towards the left sideline, ball tipped off his fingers. I'm not saying they would have won the game with Wes Welker in there, but I think that was a big factor.
I think that's actually a good point that I hadn't even thought of, to be honest with you. So,
yeah.
You know, it certainly could have – I mean, we all know that this is a game of inches, and that certainly could have been a couple of inches right there.
Yeah. Welker last week against Buffalo, he was typical Welker. He doesn't always get in the end zone, but he makes every catch over the middle. He doesn't really drop. I think he had one drop last week, which is uncharacteristic for him, especially for a guy who's thrown to so much. You know, there are going to be some drops. So I think this would have been, the way the game plan was going, I think this would have been a huge Wes Welker game. The other guy who I thought was a kind of a non-factor that was a little surprising was Kevin Faulk, who I thought, could have been more of a factor, than he was. I think that was more of a play calling thing. So, you know, there was just clearly, obviously no flow, no rhythm. And it was strange to see the way they were operating with the dry erase boards and players looking down at the wristbands constantly and, you know, players needing sort of direction and instruction from Brady or from other veterans on the offense. And especially in a short week, you know, they played last Monday night. It just struck me that, they sort of changed their operation. I mean, maybe they were just simplifying it, but in a short week, getting players up to speed on this new system and needing to remember the plays a different way. I don't know. Maybe that backfired a little bit.
Well, it sounds to me like it did. I think you're bringing up all good points that probably are largely being shoved under the rug, but I think you're right. Fact it was a short week, fact that they were trying to instigate it or, you know, institute a new play calling system in anticipation, you know, of the noise level at the stadium, which was considerable. But, you know, as I said earlier, Brian, there's no way that the fans should ever be a factor in the game like apparently the Patriots allowed them to be. It should not happen that way. Whether you're trying to institute a new system or not, that should not have been a factor, and shame on the Patriots for letting it be a factor.
I'll tell you what, one player that struck me in the locker room after the game, Adalis Thomas, talking to him, he pointed out, everyone knows Fireman Ed. Fireman Ed in the Jets games, the guy who hops up on another guy's shoulders and gets the crowd completely silent and yells out J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets.
Right.
Well, Dallas Thomas was saying he was pretty much a captain for the Jets on that day. I mean, he ran the show. And for a player to not just recognize that, but to almost acknowledge that that played a big role in the game, you just don't hear that often. And I really, like you said, it shouldn't happen that way. I think it did on this day. I think it definitely did on this day. Now, whether it was Rex Ryan leaving everyone a voicemail, whether it was the fans getting riled up based on Kerry Rhodes' comments during the week, or whether they all really did think that when Chris Jenkins said this is a Super Bowl, even though their tickets are September 20th, maybe they all really did think this was a Super Bowl. I don't know, but you're right. The crowd played a factor, and you don't like to see that happen.
No, you don't, and it should probably never have been that way. But, hey, you got to give them credit, just like a lot of the other guys, you know, did in the locker room after.
Sure.
The Jets game plan, no matter what it was, whatever it was, it worked.
You give them credit. Having the luxury last Sunday of, you know, having a Patriots Monday night game and watching some games, I watched quite a bit of that Jets game, and you came to the Jets-Houston game, and you came away from that game saying, you know, this is going to be a tough out. This team, you know, maybe they don't end up much better than 8-8 this year. There's a rookie quarterback, rookie coach, but they're going to be a tough out. And, a tough defense, good running game, and a quarterback that doesn't, you know, that you limit what his responsibilities are, but he capitalizes when necessary. It's very similar, obviously. There's obviously many parallels to Baltimore of last year, starting with the Rex Ryan factor. And you just figured this is going to be a tough out. And I thought the Patriots would win. I really did. But now, you know, you've got to consider the Jets a factor in this division. You absolutely do.
No question. So now that we kind of turned the page here, and
now that we've picked the nits from that.
I've got a few more nits still here to pick with some of our emailers today, which we'll get to before we're all done.
You might need to go beyond 4 o'clock on this one, right?
It's quite possible. although that's what they tell me is I'll still go to four here. At the same rate, though, I mean, this team has to pick it up, and as you suggested, they've got to play this week against a team that largely has a very explosive offense. Maybe some questions defensively, but offensively, there's no doubting the fact that Matt Ryan has had a superb start to his career. He gets to come back to an area where he excelled collegiately at Boston College, and Atlanta is one of those teams that seems to be on the tip of a lot of tongues when it comes to time to talking about contenders in the NFC.
Yeah, this will probably turn out to be one of the most well-rounded offenses in the National Football League. I mean, they've got a quarterback who was a rookie last year but played like a veteran, and so far through two games this year, they seem to be operating pretty well. Michael Turner hasn't had an explosive first 2 weeks, but he's a very good running back. You got Roddy White, you got Tony Gonzalez, a well above average pass catching players from Matt Ryan to throw to, and this is going to be the most balanced offense, certainly more so than the Bills and Jets that the Patriots have seen so far this year. What's troubling, and I said this from the beginning, was while the Patriots defense wasn't bad against the Jets and even had its moments against the Bills, they just don't come up with that game-changing play that when it's needed. And against the Jets, you know, on third down, the Jets were only 3 of 11, which, you know, percentage-wise, hey, if you leave a game and say we held the opposing team to 3 of 11 on third down, that's not bad. But those three were killers One of them was the 3rd and 13. The Jets were deep in their own end, mm-hmm. and it was a 13-yard pass play to Liam Washington. It was a 3rd and 9 that led to, I think, on the touchdown drive. So I think this defense is going to really have to button up on third down. I mean, that's so easy for me to say. I don't know. You know, I can't tell you exactly what the problem is other than a few players need to show up more than they are as far as making potential game-changing plays like Adalis Thomas. How about Derek Burgess, you know, guy, the pass rusher? I think they're really going to this has to be a turning point game for the defense if the defense is going to succeed this year.
No question. So far I'm right there with you on all the fronts. I wish I could argue with you right now, but I don't think I can because, frankly, I happen to share your thoughts here.
And the other thing about the defense is I think there's going to have to be done at linebacker as far as you know, more depth and more horses. You know, Dallas Thomas and Gary Guyton are your linebackers right now, and you've got against the Jets they played pretty much exclusively four down linemen and a nickel or a dime. You know, guys like Telly Bantakame and Derek get in there quite a bit. They're more down linemen. There are some holes over the middle, and you know, without Gerard Mayo in there, and that's obviously a big loss.
Let me ask you something, Brian, let me ask you: are you disappointed in Adalis Thomas thus far?
Yeah. You know what I mean? You mean this year, or in the 3 years he's been here?
A little bit of both, actually.
I just think that I do expect more out of him, and I even said last week I thought this past game would be a big one for him to sort of become more of a defensive leader.
Right.
And what I mean by that is both that communication element. I really wasn't certain that Gary Guyton, until it became clear later in the week, I didn't think Gary Guyton would be that guy that would be able to step into the Mayo role of being the communication leader, but also making big plays out there. I think there's a disappointment level with Adalis Thomas. I think that whether it be rushing the passer or sort of holding his ground over the middle there, I think we should be seeing more out of Adalis Thomas. I do, and I thought the defensive line had an excellent game. Mike Wright certainly stepped up a few times, and Vince Wilfork had a great game. The secondary, while they gave up a couple of big plays and the touchdowns, I thought was okay. Was maybe average or maybe a little better than average, but the linebackers, not so much. And I think Adalis Thomas needs to sort of take the lead on that.
I think we're all kind of waiting for him to sort of take that lead, and we're not really seeing that. And, you know, I'm beginning to wonder if that was really, if he's really capable of assuming that kind of a role. I mean, I thought he had that kind of a role when he was with Baltimore, to be quite frank, you know, with you. That's why I'm, you know, I don't think we're seeing the same type of player, certainly not the same type of emotional leadership out of him that I thought we were going to get.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the spotlight, you know, shines on a guy who signs a big contract. I mean, that's just comes with the territory. And when you sign a big contract, you're being looked at as an impact guy, not just a role player. Being looked at as an impact guy, and I feel like you can almost count just on one hand the number of really impact plays he's made, and you need more of that. So, I'm certainly not writing him off. He's a good player. But I think they need to see some more impact out of him.
No question. All right. Well, that's good. Seems like I've been coming up with no question. I'm giving you absolutely 110% authoritativeness on this one. What are your thoughts then? This will be the only time I get you here. What are your thoughts then on Atlanta this week? Where do you think this game, could break down one way or the other in terms of the Patriots' chances for trying to get back on the right track? What do they need to do in your estimation?
More points. I think they should score more points and try to prevent the Falcons from scoring some. That's my analysis.
Yeah.
I think this is an opportunity. You mentioned that Atlanta's defense, is suspect. I mean,
that's
a pretty good observation. What's that?
That was a pretty good observation. Thank you.
It's a pretty good observation.
Well, there you go. I'm agreeing with you. You're agreeing with me. I think I'd like to see more balance on offense because I'm certainly not ready to write off the Patriots running game. I think the Patriots running game was really good last year. I think they've got all the offensive linemen back and a couple of different players at running back, like Fred Taylor is in, Heath Evans is out, but a similar overall feel to the running game. I think they need to use that a little more and balance it up a little bit. I think, like I said, if Wes Welker's in there, I think this could be an opportunity for the offense overall, the passing game and the running game.
Do you think Welker will be back? I mean, had you seen him in the locker room?
I didn't see him in the locker room yesterday. I'll tell you what, on Sunday at the game, He was out there early. He was out there. He was the first guy out there, and he was warming up with a trainer near him. But it didn't seem like it was to my eyes. It didn't seem like it was we're testing this guy out to see him play. I was stunned. I was very surprised that he didn't play because he played against Buffalo. There was no indication that there was any other aggravation, but apparently there was. So I am assuming that he's going to play because I thought it was such a close game time decision that one more week of being able to fix up that knee will probably help. So I will assume he's going to play, but I guess you never know.
Yeah.
And then defensively for the Patriots, I mean, the cornerbacks are going to have to really hold up. I don't know if we're going to see a similar. I think as of now, based on the construction of the roster, I think we're going to see more of this nickel and dime more often than not, just because they just kind of need to play that way. So we'll see. I mean, it's always tough when you get these NFC teams.
What that's going to mean, Brian, is that you're going to have the Lilliputians going up against the big giant and Tony Gonzalez coming across the middle.
Well, and, that's a good point because that's another almost a separate entity all into himself. You know, that's a guy that, you know, if Rodney Harrison were still around and healthy, he'd certainly be a guy that would probably be lined up against lined up against Gonzalez a few times like he did in the past,
yeah,
with some big name pass catching tight ends. Maybe that's where Dalis Thomas sort of has to play a bigger role is covering that tight end. Because I think you're right. It's very difficult to expect a Jonathan Wilhite or a Lee Bodden to do damage against Gonzalez, but they'll have their hands full with Roddy White and company.
Absolutely. What's coming up on Patriots Today this week for you? Can you give us some previews?
Pardon me?
Can you give us some previews?
I can, of course, give you some previews. We've got on today's show a little more of a breakdown of sort of the communication problems that took place on offense and on defense against the Jets as we kind of wrap up what went on there. And then, I think what we're going to start looking at this week is they have two straight games here against two of the surprise teams from last year, both of whom had rookie quarterbacks that really excelled and the Patriots have never seen before. So they've got those two in a row, Matt Ryan and Joe Flacco, and start to analyze what they're going to have to deal with what the Patriots defense is going to have to deal with these offenses and rookie or second-year quarterbacks they just haven't seen before. So, big week, the first time they're going from a Sunday to a Sunday, so that'll help everybody involved just gathering their thoughts for a new week. And we'll see what we got in the Falcons.
Right. I think that it's an interesting point. The fact is that the only one rookie had ever had success in his debut against Bill Belichick before Sunday, and that was Ben Roethlisberger. But
yeah,
Technically you have a couple of quarterbacks coming up on the schedule, including this week, guys that, have not faced a Bill Belichick defense before. So one of the subplots to the game will certainly be how they react. Yeah.
You're right. They're not rookies, but they're not all that far removed from being rookies. And like you said, there's always the spotlight on the Bill Belichick defense and what they can do to quarterbacks. And hopefully the way it worked with Mark Sanchez, hopefully for them, is not a trend.
Right. Absolutely. Good stuff, Bilo. Thanks for calling in, buddy.
John, no problem. Always good talking to you. And we'll see you in there. I will be there on Thursday.
Awesome.
Ready for the Fantasy
That's
Lowdown.
Right. Fantasy Lowdown coming up on Thursday, 4 o'clock Eastern time. There you go.
You bet.
All right.
Enjoy the rest of the show.
All right. See you, buddy. Brian Lowe from Patriots Today here on Patriots.com, and download the latest show. If it's not already posted, it'll be up soon. And, of course, he'll be a part of our Patriots.com radio programming Thursday with the Fantasy Lowdown. Let's get to some more emails here so we can try to get in as many as we can before we end the program here at the top of the hour. Our friend Howard from Connecticut does check in and says, well, even with everything they did wrong, they were still within a touchdown of tying the game up there at the end. Credit to the Jets D for pressuring Brady and for Sanchez, and the O for not making mistakes. My nitpick is the following. I may be in the minority here, but I put more blame on the D in this game, specifically the DC, that's defensive coordinator, Dean Pease, for not pressuring the rookie quarterback into oblivion. I understand the O was an issue, however, I'm giving them a pass for the following reasons. A, quarterback is coming back from a major injury. Contrary to popular belief among the fans, this is going to take time. Somebody else believes like I do. Unbelievable. B, we lost a highly qualified offensive coordinator and now have a new offensive coordinator who needs to develop and mature. That's absolutely true. Mr. O'Brien, and he's not Josh McDaniels. C, Wes Walker wasn't available. D, Joey Galloway really stinks. Nothing like getting right down to brass tacks. It is going to take Brady and his wide receivers time to get on the same page. It's going to take time for Brady to get comfortable playing again. It's going to take time for the new quasi-offensive coordinator to get into a rhythm of what he can and can't do with the personnel he has to use, especially against pressuring D like they faced in the Jets. Let me also add here that, yes, while O'Brien is a guy that's doing that and has taken over sort of as the de facto guy, he doesn't call all the plays. I believe he's more of the quarterback's coach, yes. But when it comes right down to it, the bottom line, the buck stops with the head coach and the play calling this year. I'm sure there's input. I'm sure suggestions are made. Buck stops with the HC.
Zero out slot right, 335 max base throwback chip flare.
I like that play call. Why didn't we see any of that on Sunday is what I'm wondering. He says, therefore, it becomes incumbent upon the D to step up and carry this team. They need to make big plays. Heck, they need to contribute at least one score a game. However, that is going to be virtually impossible when you rush four and drop seven and get no pressure on the quarterback, especially a rookie. Like I said, I blame Dean Pease for the bulk of this loss simply because, although they only gave up 16 points, they could have given up a lot less if they had pressured Sanchez like the Jets pressured Brady. May have even contributed a score like they used to do under Romeo Crennel. Time will tell, but unless the D goes back to being more creative with their blitzing schemes and more aggressive in getting after the QB, this will be a very long year because it's going to take time for this O to gain its footing. Interesting points, Howard. Interesting points. I'm not sure that, you know, I certainly see your points. I don't disagree with them. I think that the defense does need to be more aggressive in their play calling. I do think they missed an opportunity to blitz Sanchez, into oblivion a bit. I won't disagree with that. But I still think that had the offense not completely and totally stunk it up on Sunday, they still find a way to win that game. Steven in Boston says, what do you think of Edelman in terms of a replacement for Wes Welker just in case his injury recurs? I personally think he did a good job in a tricky game. Sure, he did fine. I mean, his numbers are going to back that up, right? 8 catches, 98 yards. You know, he did a great job. But I think, you know, you and I and everybody else saw at times he still wasn't quite certain where to be and what to do. And, you know, he was just a hair behind on a couple of catches, as Brian Lowe pointed out just a short while ago, that could have led to a touchdown rather than a field goal in one of those earlier drives in the first half. Could have. We'll never know the answer to that definitively. But, you know, when you consider where the guy's come from, seventh-round draft pick, quarterback converted to wide receiver, he did great. I mean, the players in the locker room even call him Mini-Me in terms of, mocking Wes Welker. Mini-Wes. Same type of build, same type of persona, same type of, style. Yeah, he's definitely, he'll be the guy that replaced Welker on Sunday. And you know, who knows? If Welker goes down or is out for any length of time, it'll probably be Edelman. But there is a huge learning curve involved here when you consider the fact that he's never played this position before this season. Did he do a good job? Yeah. Yeah, he did okay when you take all of the factors into consideration. But the bottom line is the team lost. So that's, you know, something I think that probably, you know, still needs to be considered in the long haul. John says, why did we abandon the run in the second half? Our first series in the third, we ran right down the field, failed to get past the red zone, and then spent the rest of the game throwing something I would like to see as it pertains to the running game, and that's Ben Jarvis Green Ellis. I know with all the high-priced talent we have at running back, we have to use them, but I'd love to see someone like Law Firm, who's not only talented, but young enough to be fearless. He makes it happen. John, I would tell you that, I actually share that nitpick with you, and the other guys aren't cutting it. Yeah, they should absolutely activate him and giving him an opportunity to produce, because it seems like every other time he's been out there, he has produced. I would concur with that particular assessment. Chris in Stamford, Connecticut. Patriots have solid personnel overall. What they don't seem to have this year is a playmaker on either side of the ball, especially without Mayo and Welker. Against Buffalo, Merriweather and Woods stripped the ball, then Watson made the catch of his life. This past Sunday, it seemed like everyone was waiting for someone else to do something. I think Adalys Thomas is a good defender, but I'd think more of him if he just held onto that tip ball for the interception. Good points. New England needed a couple of impact plays, someone coming up with a big catch, or someone, anyone, getting pressure on Sanchez, and I hope that we won't have to watch a game quite like that again. So here's the question. Who's the impact player on this team? Doesn't have to be a Brewski, Harrison, or Vrabel. We could use a bunch of Freddie Coleman's and Matt Chatham's, too. I don't know. It's a great question, Chris. I don't know that there is an impact player like the one you're trying to describe here, and I think that could be part of the problem. I think we've kind of waited for Dalis Thomas to be that impact player, and he hasn't quite fulfilled that role. Richard Seymour, I think, qualified potentially as that kind of an impact player, and oops, they've traded him to Oakland for a pick. We won't even know what that will be for 2 more years. That's a career. That's a lifetime in the NFL for some guys, 2 years. I don't know that a guy like Will Fork is that way. I don't think he can be by the very nature of his position. You know, Teddy Bruschi retired. Vrabel's gone. Rodney Harrison retired. I think we lost a lot of emotion on that side of the ball, and I think that's part of the problem here is that these guys are trying or looking around, looking side to side, over their shoulders, frontwards, backwards. They're trying to find that emotional leadership out there, and it's just some guys are not yet ready to handle it. They've never been thrust into that role, apparently. This team did thrive on emotion. There's no question. They were a rhythm team, a rhythm defense, an emotional defense, and most of that emotion is gone. Not completely. Doesn't mean these guys are unemotional, but they weren't as, shall we say, forward with that emotion as the guys who have now left this team. I think the thought was that Mayo could eventually be that kind of guy. He deferred to the veterans last year as a rookie. He was ready, apparently, to step up a bit more this year in that role, based on listening to his conversations and reading what he's had to say throughout, you know, the training camps and the offseason, and now you've lost him after the first game. And so it's back to square one, trying to find this, you know, emotional leader defensively. I think a guy like Brandon Merriweather could be that guy still. Merriweather's got that swagger. He's got a little bit of that sway. He's got that whole you thing going for him, which is fine. That's the way those guys played football. It's what got them going every day. I think, you know, to be honest with you, if not Dalis Thomas, I think Thomas should step up. But if not him, Merriweather, I think, is that same kind of guy that could be that Rodney Harrison type of role defensively. He needs to be. Somebody on this team needs to be. That is a very important role. Kenneth says, can't listen to you guys live very often, but wanted to get this email in. Well, we're thankful that you download the podcast, Kenneth. Thank you. Columnists everywhere have written about the strength of the Jets defense and how good that team may be after having beat the Patriots. As someone who watched the Pats struggle against the Bills and then struggle similarly against the Jets, I've got a very different viewpoint. It looks like the Patriots' offense is off. Brady has been off target on many of his throws, even when not pressured. The team keeps stalling in the red zone. Receivers aren't always on the same page as the QB. For example, see Galloway against the Jets, several passes he and Brady missed on with each other. It's my opinion that regardless of how much he wants to deny it, Brady is rusty after a year of not playing. And he and his receivers are just not right now on the same page. I think we're all in agreement here, Kenneth. I'm sure I'll sound like a homer saying this, but the Jets did not beat the Patriots. The Patriots' offense beat the Patriots. Hell, the defense, which we were all worried about, even did its job for the most part. Sure, there were some serious failures, but the Jets only scored 16 points, not 24 or 35. Brady wasn't sacked once, even if hurried a few times. He was hit 7 times, however, and that can take a toll. This is me talking now, Kenneth. That can take a toll on a QB, even if you're not down on the ground. And then Kenneth winds up by saying, the O-line did a pretty good job of picking up blitzes. The Brady of 07 does not lose this game. The Brady of 09 needs some time to get back into the swing of things. No disagreements, but this is just part of the problem. It's just part of the equation on offense. Yes, he needs time. The offensive line needs to give it to him. The running backs need to give it to him. The receivers who are not on the same page as him need to give it to him. My problem is that none of those guys, none of those facets of the team are giving it to him now. And that's why the offense is struggling. So, Eric in San Francisco says, watching the game against the Jets was depressing, to be sure. It was eerily similar to the 07 Super Bowl loss, seeing Brady scampering for his life, having on average about 2.5 seconds to get rid of the ball. But it got me thinking about the running debate of whether you would prefer 10 more years of Brady or the undefeated season with Brady retiring afterwards. Initially, I sided with the big head on this one. Give me Brady for 10 more years. After Tuesday, there can be no longer any legitimate debate. Give me the undefeated season. Great quarterbacks come around every 5 to 10 years. In the last 30 years alone, there's been Montana, Fouts, Marino, Elway, Kelly, Favre, Aikman, Brady, Warner, and arguably Breeze, Roethlisberger, and Moon. But there is only one undefeated season in a lifetime. I will never see the Patriots do it. Neither will my kids or grandkids, and I don't have either yet. I used to hate watching Mercury, Morris, Bonacotti, and company drink champagne every year and celebrate, but now I get it. It is arguably the most cherished and difficult to attain record in all of sports, and dare I say, more impressive than Roger Maris' 67-game hitting streak. Whose? I think you meant Joe DiMaggio. At any rate, sorry, Brady, I changed my vote to the undefeated season. Interesting perspective, Eric, and thanks for sharing. Let's see what else we have here. Robin in Alaska. The way to solve many of the offense's woes is to feature the running game while allowing Brady to find himself again. The Pats will, of course, always be a passing team with Brady at the helm, but right now the Brady we all know and love is not at the helm. It took Manning 6 games last year before he was almost back to himself. It's only week 2 right now, and the Pats are about to run the gauntlet against the teams that look to be playoff caliber. Changes need to be made right now in order to survive the next month's schedule. The Pats are stacked with a running game with healthy, solid, and serviceable players at running back and tight end. It's time to utilize the running game this year like the Pats did last year when they were protecting Castle until he was comfortable. Robin, those are outstanding points, and outstanding points to end the program with today. Yeah, I totally agree. Let's see if the play calling this week might be able to be adjusted somewhat to allow Brady that opportunity to get more comfortable in the offense. And who knows, maybe even keep the other ball, keep the football out of the hands of the opposing offense, which would in turn, of course, take pressure off the Patriots' defense. See, one hand washes the other where this is concerned, right? All right, coming up on the program tomorrow on Wednesday, well, you know, midweek, and we'll turn our attentions officially to the Atlanta Falcons who come in here on Sunday afternoon. The Patriots try to get back on the winning track. We'll have some conference calls, probably some locker room stuff going on tomorrow as well. Eric Scalavino from PFW will join us in the opening hour at the very least, right, Jason?
I believe so, and possibly a guest.
Oh, that means that it's in progress of being worked out, correct?
Correct.
All right. So, see, it'll be...
I can't remember if it's tomorrow or Thursday.
It'll be a surprise. Suffice to say...
But you'll find out if you tune in.
That's right. We'll have plenty of stuff as we get ready for Atlanta. Inside the playbook, manana. Same Pat's time, same Pat's channel, manana.